Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you this morning. So earlier this week, our staff had an opportunity to head out to Christ in the Desert Monastery, which is in New Mexico, for a silent retreat. So it was a really gift for just us personally, collectively, as a team. Just it was a restorative time to be out in this beautiful canyon. It's remote. It's disconnected from everything. It just really offered us space to settle into ourselves, to creation, just to be. We also did have a photo shoot for our future album cover, which is going to be a mix of indie rock, Americana, hip-hop, theater musical, like all those things into one. That's what the album's going to be about. But being with the team, I experienced a lot of gratitude. Since this was the first time we've done anything just in this configuration of our staff, it was a reminder for me just how grateful I am for each person on this team and how we've been trying to reimagine and practice a way of leading that isn't modeled on the typical hierarchical structure. And so for those of you who were with us last fall, we went through a homily series on the posture of non-hierarchy and just what it means for us as individuals, as a community, to embody something hopefully more healthy than what many of the structures that permeate our institutions and churches, and especially for our leadership team, right? To move away from being driven by a figurehead and to really embrace and embody shared leadership. And so before we jump in, I want to give you all a moment to reflect on this question. What is your relationship to power and authority, right? How would you describe your feelings and posture towards power and authority? So I'll give you a moment to reflect on that. And if you're willing, go ahead and share that with someone next to you. Or if you don't like taking orders, I'm not trying to impose on you. So do as you will. But I'll give you a moment to do that. All right. Well, it seems like you have some pretty, some thoughts around this. So what comes up for you all? What comes up for you all when you think about your relationship with power or authority? What comes up?
Mistrust.
Mistrust? Okay, that's fair. Yeah. You're not sure if you can trust that source of power. Questioning. What else? Rebelliousness? Yeah, okay, I see you. What's that?
Petty tyrants.
There may or may not be some that are out there right now in the world. Anything else?
Love.
Love? Can be a source. Yes, power if you have love. That's a powerful thing. Anything else?
It depends.
It's complicated. Yes, it is complicated. So recently I had a conversation with a friend. She used to be part of Vox, but she's moved to the Northeast. And I was sharing about some of our shifts, like in our leadership structure here, and how we're hoping to practice non-hierarchy. And so she asked me what my relationship is with power and authority. And so I started reflecting back to her just, you know, how so much harm has been done by institutions and churches and, you know, that are led by charismatic figureheads and how no human should be given that much access to power and influence. But then she asked me again, like more pointedly, she wanted to know my specific relationship to power and authority. And as I dug a little deeper, I had to admit that power makes me uncomfortable. Like, I don't necessarily like being in a position that has perceived power and influence, which is why I think I honestly embraced the whole non-hierarchy thing and just embraced the shared leadership thing. Because one, I don't like to impose things on others, and so I tend to shy away from power. And two, even though I think I can trust myself enough, I also don't want to find out the hard way that having too much access to power would change me or change the community in a negative way. And so it feels very comfortable for me just to deflect power. And at the same time, you know, as we've been transitioning to this more non-hierarchical structure, there have still been moments and experiences within our team where we've realized that hierarchical structure, patriarchy, just different forms of harmful power are still deeply embedded in each of us, and maybe that we weren't aware of. Whether it's cultural or whether it's, you know, gendered experiences, there can be defaults and tendencies that still trap us within harmful power structures. And so as we enter this third week of Lent, this season invites us to make space for and to practice letting go of things that control us. And so the question I want to explore this morning is, how might we practice letting go of harmful power structures and systems? You know, maybe even if we aren't aware of the embedded impact, like, how are we invited to explore our work in moving away from harmful power systems that might exist in our places of work, or our family systems, or other institutions that we're part of? And in our lectionary text for this morning, we read an account of Jesus' actions at the temple and how we're invited to occupy the spaces and structures of power around us in a way that releases the control that harmful power might have over us. And so we start in verse 13. The Jewish Passover was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple with the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those who were selling the doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my father's house a marketplace." And so this narrative of Jesus clearing the temple, it's found in all four of the gospel accounts, right? Because I'm pretty sure it's an experience that no one's going to forget. And I mean, imagine if you were there, right? You've just traveled miles to Jerusalem and with just hundreds and thousands of other people. So it's extremely crowded. It's going to be kind of like next week when the crowds descend for South By. But once you've entered the temple courtyard, right, imagine, like, you're hearing all the noises, the animals, the people yelling and shouting. You smell the animals. Everyone around you is trying to do business, buying animals, changing money. And in an already chaotic environment, Jesus then starts chasing people and animals out of the temple, starts yelling at people who've set up to do business, clearing tables, scattering money everywhere, flipping tables onto the ground. I mean, that had to have been such a confusing and stressful moment for everyone watching. It's such a different, almost incongruent image of Jesus that everyone expected. You know, one thing to keep in mind, though, is that this whole operation in the temple courtyard was actually necessary for the temple to run and to function. People were making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, and it would have been difficult to travel with all the animals they needed for sacrifice, and so it was practical to purchase them all on site. And because the temple currency was different, it required funds to be exchanged, so these things in themselves weren't necessarily the problem. Instead, in the other gospel accounts, Jesus refers to the animal sellers and money changers as thieves and robbers, implying that they're charging way too much money, making personal profit at the expense of those who really had no other options, no choice, right? Thinking like Moody Center, the markup. And here, right, in John's account, Jesus specifically calls out those who are selling doves, because the extremely poor were actually allowed to offer doves
as sacrifices instead of cattle and sheep. Yet, instead of taking care of and looking out for the poor, they're making them spend what little they have in order to participate in their spiritual practice. And so Jesus was simply naming what people were experiencing. Right? He was attempting to disrupt a system that wasn't working for the people and actually was taking advantage of them. And so for us, as we consider how to let go of harmful power structures, we're invited to reveal and disrupt oppressive systems. You know, Jesus was modeling a form of disruption that meant impacting the day-to-day lives in order to uncover and reveal the nature of that oppressive system. And so what and where is our invitation to reveal, to uncover, to disrupt? You know, recently I watched the film Origin, which was directed by Ava DuVernay. It tells the story of the life and work of Isabel Wilkerson, who is a reporter that won a Pulitzer Prize and was also a historian, a sociologist. And after the murder of Trayvon Martin in Florida, which sparked the beginning of the Black Lives Matter movement, that became the impetus for Wilkerson to understand the roots of why Black bodies were subjected to so much violence and oppression. And she wanted to dig deeper and find the threads that tie together the fabric of why societies historically, right, have created structures and systems that choose exclusion and violence towards a specific group of people. And so she began making ties between the painful African-American experience, right, the trauma of slavery and Jim Crow, and how that informed and even shaped the German Nazi Party and their cruelty that led to the Holocaust. And then finding a foundational thread that ties it all the way back to the caste system of India. And so based on all that research, she released her book, Caste, at the beginning of the pandemic. And this is how she describes the caste system. She says that a caste system is an artificial construction, a fixed and embedded ranking of human value that sets the presumed supremacy of one group against the presumed inferiority of other groups on the basis of ancestry and often immutable traits, traits that would be neutral in the abstract, but are ascribed life and death meaning. It relies on stigmatizing those deemed inferior to justify the dehumanization necessary to keep the lowest ranked people at the bottom and to rationalize the protocols of enforcement. And so she was simply naming the oppressive reality of power structures that have been used and maintained for the benefit of a group that has deemed themselves superior. And so it's through her writing, her skills as a researcher, right, that she's offering a form of disruption in order to reveal how these oppressive systems and power structures have maintained the power they have, all at the expense of the most vulnerable. And so for us, maybe a practice we can try this Lent is to find opportunities to simply name the experiences of oppressive systems, right? The ones that maybe you've encountered in your own life, in your own experiences, and then share that with someone, just as a way to reveal and uncover that harmful power structure. And then maybe if you haven't had a chance yet, watch the film Origin or read the book Caste as a way to participate in the disruption that Isabel Wilkerson has created for us. And then we continue in verse 16. He told those who were selling the doves, "Take these things out of here. Stop making my father's house a marketplace." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." And so John here gives a bit more context about what's going through Jesus' emotions when he responded the way he did. And that zeal that consumed him to the point where he expresses his anger in a way that connects his emotions with his body. He's able to engage in justice and care for the most vulnerable. And keep in mind, right, there's another layer to consider, because the Roman Empire is actually on top of this hierarchical structure that the Jewish temple sits under. And so Roman officials would actually appoint the chief priests. The Roman government would be the ones who benefited financially from the marketplace. They got a cut from all the revenue coming in from the temple rituals and sacrifices. And so in some ways, Jesus' anger was also in response to Roman occupation and oppression that was playing out in the temple. In some ways, this was his act of protest. It was this performative art. And for all to see and bear witness, to be able to uncover injustice at all levels. And so for us, as we consider how to let go of harmful power structures, we're invited to embody our anger through protest. To not only be aware of what emotions are surfacing, but to also make space to express anger that reveals and disrupts. And I know I have a tendency to be disconnected from my own emotions, in particular anger. Whether it's cultural expectations or just being an Enneagram 9, suppressing my anger feels safer, right? And it requires less internal energy to manage if I don't have to express it. And so it becomes easy to bypass for me. But it's important for us to locate where it sits in our bodies and what our anger surfaces in response to. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist mystic and contemplative, had this to say about making space for anger in ourselves. He says, mindfulness does not fight anger or despair. To be mindful of something is to recognize that something is there in the present moment. Breathing in, I know that anger has manifested in me. Breathing out, I smile towards my anger. This is not an act of suppression or of fighting. It is an act of recognizing. Once we recognize our anger, we embrace it with a lot of awareness, a lot of tenderness. And I appreciate his focus on recognition, right? And having the intentionality to identify the anger instead of just suppressing it. And I know it's difficult to hold space for it when it seems like there's just unending causes of injustice happening in our world constantly. It's difficult to stay connected to what's surfacing in our emotions and our bodies because it's exhausting. And yet still for me, for this Lent, I chose to give up my natural tendency to check out and disconnect. Like, I really want to be intentional about staying present with what's around me, with my family, with what's happening internally, with what's happening in the world around me. To have awareness for my anger towards injustice and not suppress it. And so for us, maybe something we can try this Lenten season is to sit with and identify our anger. Where is it located in our bodies? What injustice is it in response to? Cole Arthur Riley has a reflection and meditation on embodying anger. And so for those of us who struggle to connect with our anger, as I read this meditation, I invite us just to listen, receive it, make space to consider how this might look like for you. This is what she says. We fear that to allow for anger is to become less like the divine. Let us meet the God of the prophets, for you tell the truth. You hold fury at injustice. You, in embodied anger, flipped the temple tables. Would you help us to become faithful discerners of when to calm and when to rouse? Rejecting that anger which leads to bitterness or hatred of another, yet tapping into a righteous rage when that which you've created is under abuse and neglect. The dignity of creation demands our emotions. Make ours a beautiful rage. And so how are we invited to channel the beautiful rage that protests abuse and neglect around us? And then we close in verse 18. The Jewish leaders then said to him, "What sign can you show us for doing this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." They then said, "This temple has been under construction for 46 years, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. And so the Jewish leaders and Jesus are communicating on very different channels, right? The leaders are still focused on this physical temple, the importance of it, while Jesus is attempting to let them know that there won't be a need for this temple. Right? His impending death and resurrection will facilitate freedom and access to the divine for all people. He was removing the barriers, the gatekeeping that was excluding people from accessing the divine. Where the religious leaders were so intent on centralizing and hoarding their power that they'd become an embodiment of exclusion. And it's interesting that in John's account here, Jesus seems less interested in addressing or correcting the corruption and more focused on the need for completely dismantling the entire system. And so for us, as we consider how to let go of harmful power structures, we're invited to reimagine what decentralized power could look like. Right? How might we innovate, consider new structures, consider new systems that remove barriers and gatekeeping? And in order for that to happen, perhaps it means that current and existing structures need to die first in order for something new to be birthed. This is how the Korean theologian Mi-hee Kim Court describes what Jesus was trying to communicate. She says, Jesus came to replace the pillars of existence with himself. The word made flesh is the beautiful sign of incarnation, but it is a proclamation of something more. It is the miraculous disruption of the status quo, which Jesus speaks of when he shouts, "Stop making my Father's house a marketplace." He doesn't just criticize the dishonest and shady practices of vendors selling the necessary wares for appropriate temple worship. He announces that he is there to take down the entire structure. Some of you might be aware of this, but you know, Vox used to be part of a denomination called ECC, the Evangelical Covenant Church. It was founded in the late 1880s by a Swedish immigrant community. And so when we were first introduced to this denomination, there was a lot of resonance just with that immigrant story, the roots, because Vox itself was birthed from a Chinese immigrant church. And there were many aspects about this denomination that felt like a good fit for our community. I mean, the ECC had a history and intention of always leaving room for dissent, welcoming other voices when it came to theological difference. And that meant holding space for tension, for dialogue, for relationship. And yet in recent years, there's been a shift in the denominational leadership, as well as many of the churches, especially when it came to human sexuality. And so when our community entered an intentional discernment process that led us to become fully affirming of our LGBTQ siblings, we were told that we were no longer in alignment with the denomination. And to make a long story short, we chose to leave the ECC. We wrote an open letter about our decision back in 2019. And then fast forward to about a month ago in Phoenix, I met with 8 other ECC pastors, and they were from churches around the country, and some of them were either recently kicked out as well, or they were about to leave the denomination. And I noticed for me just the grief, the sadness, the anger even, that was surfacing as I heard them share about their painful experiences, because it brought me back to our experience. But one of the main reasons we gathered together was to spend time collectively imagining what might be next, right? Whether denominations are even worth joining anymore. We did this one tactile exercise where we were supposed to find whatever objects we could find in the Airbnb we were staying at, and to build the physical representation that would capture the structure of the ECC denomination. And I think these photos, you're not gonna have any idea what that is. It makes no sense. But what we were trying to do was we were trying to capture how the entire institution was centralized in the middle by just a very small handful of people who have most of the power and control. And everything that existed in that structure was really for the benefit and ongoing survival of that center place of power. And so one of the primary reflections everyone had was that this was probably an opportunity just to ditch the entire structure, because it wasn't working for the people and the groups who are the most vulnerable. And most of our conversation focused on reimagination, dreaming, brainstorming, what an accessible, supportive collective could actually look like. And leaving that gathering, I did find a sense of hopefulness, right? That there can be newness and life that comes from something dying. That there can be other ways than just hoarding power and control and gatekeeping that ends up isolating and marginalizing those who need belonging and care the most. And so what does that mean for us to reimagine ways of being and creating a healthier community? I think as we continue in our own journey here of non-hierarchical leadership, it will be a continual reimagination, which is both scary and beautiful. And so Vox, as we close this morning, my hope is that we would continue to reflect on Jesus' actions in clearing the temple throughout this week, throughout the remainder of Lent, that we would consider the broken systems that no longer work in our lives, the ones that come at the expense of the most vulnerable, that we would look for ways to draw attention to and disrupt those systems that stir up beautiful rage against injustice. And may that bring us to a hopeful awareness of the new and reimagined possibilities that Christ offers us, individually and collectively. And so let me close with this prayer. God, who created all in the image of the divine, may we reveal and disrupt the systems that try to cover up the divine image in any of us. Jesus, who embodied protest in the form of freeing animals and overturning tables, may we locate and embody the anger within that will continue to stand up to harmful power. And Spirit, who advocates for freedom, creating spaces for all to be seen and heard, may we remove barriers and recenter ourselves in the margins so that all may discover themselves to be known and loved. And so we ask all this in the kindness of God our Creator, the embodiment of Christ, and the freedom of the Spirit. Amen.